Make yourselves comfortable. My master will be with you shortly.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go. Welcome to Nightwise.com.
Nightwise.com. Tune tech into your way of life and let the technology work for you.
Edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go, and you found it. Welcome to the Nightwise.com podcast, the one and only podcast that tunes tech into your way of life and lets the technology work for you. My name is Nightwise, and for the coming almost 90 minutes, I'll be your host on this episode of the Nightwise.com podcast entitled Max and Mommies. For more information and the show notes, please head on over to www.nightwise.com. That's KNIGHTWISE.com, where you'll find all the links to the stuff we talk about, and of course, the links to our RSS feeds. Use these media feeds to subscribe to either the podcast, the screencast, both, or to the articles on the website, getting all of the Nightwise.com content delivered to you automatically in your favorite podcatcher or feed catcher. You can follow us online and you can follow us on Twitter. If you want to get in touch with us, you can. Twitter.com/Nightwise is our Twitter handle. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/NightwiseCom, or you can just use the good old-fashioned power of email, feedback@Nightwise.com. Hey, guys and girls, it's great to be back. Episode 2 for the third season of Nightwise.com and the Nightwise.com podcast. And today we have a special for you. I have got a great interview for you, so I'm going to keep this intro short and sweet. We are talking to digital entrepreneur, freelance consultant, graphic designer, and mommy, Melissa Davis, a.k.a. The Mac Mommy, in an interview that was supposed to be about Apple and Apple technology, but from the first question went completely off the deep end into a riveting and very entertaining interview about the digital age, parenting the X and the Y generations. It's a little bit on the long side, but it is very entertaining, and that is, of course, all to be credited to the lovely Melissa Davis, who's the star of today's Nightwise.com podcast. So, I'll keep this short and sweet. Here's the interview. Catch you on the flip side. Three, two, one. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Nightwise.com podcast, where today we talk to one of my personal internet heroes. Some say she is the most adventurous woman to have sailed the Pacific Ocean on an Apple trackpad. Some say she is being known for giving Steve Jobs his brightest ideas whenever he was at a loss, and she personally came up with the iPod because it was an idea that she rejected. All we know that she is called Melissa Davis, a.k.a. The Mac Mommy. Welcome to the Nightwise.com podcast.
Oh, I'm almost speechless. That's pretty good.
I want to start.
Broke your whole NDA over that because you weren't supposed to talk about that whole iPod thing.
Oh yes,
I know. It's the iPad.
Oh, the iPod. Oh, okay. The iPod was an idea you completely rejected. And okay, yes, yes, the iPad.
I said it needed to be bigger.
Okay. it's great to have you, Melissa. Finally, we've got one of my personal internet heroes in this internet hero series on the Nightwise.com podcast. People I've been wanting to talk to for quite a long time. To give us the elevator pitch, if we were to get into an elevator with your charming personality and what would be your pitch? What is the elevator pitch on Melissa, a.k.a. the Mac Mommy Davis?
Oh, I'll probably screw it up, but it's something that I have on my Twitter bio. I'm a multitasking mom on a Mac, a multimedia multitasking mom on a Mac, I should say.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. So, Melissa Davis, you are from Tucson, Arizona, correct? Mm-hmm. Back there in the far southeast of America, the southwest.
Southwest.
Mm-hmm. I always mix up east and west.
I'm originally from the northeast, and now I live in the southwest.
Your awesomeness has gone down to the other corner of the United States. Now, we all know you as the Mac Mommy. That, of course, implies some bias and preference for a certain brand of either fast food or Apple technology. How did you get into technology? Because you, I'll start off by asking you, what do you do? You are a stay-at-home mom, but that is far from what you do.
Mm-hmm. My general umbrella term for it is an IT consultant, but I've taken the IT to mean it's kind of changed over the years. It used to be maybe internet technology, whatever it stands for. It means something different for everybody. For me lately though, with the type of thing that I do as a professional consulting business, I take it to mean information technology. So now I primarily work with mostly it's senior citizens, and I do private consulting. I'm kind of like a doctor. I do house calls. So I take my bag, my laptop, and my gadgets and cables and whatever it is that I need, and I go to people's houses, and because mostly elderly who are either shut-ins or they don't get out very much, or, you know, it's kind of funny because now more and more of them are mobile, but yet they're still tethered, even with their laptop. So I would say now it's morphed into more information technology is what I work with, because I teach people how to work with the information, the communication, all the different, not necessarily hardware gadgets, but software. And, you know, one of the biggest requests, two biggest requests that I get lately has been, what is Facebook? How do I use it? You know, they're baffled by that. And how do I manage my finances online? So online banking and financial management.
So how is that how would you tie that into actually educating people on technology? Because I'm an educator as a background. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the greatest challenge to actually translating and bringing over a fast-moving internet society to the elderly? What is the biggest challenge there, and how do you go about that?
Actually, what really kind of vaulted me into this was my background in working with elementary children. One of my many different jobs in, you know, and around working with Macs is I was a site technician for an elementary school, actually two different elementary schools. And so I worked with kids from ages kindergarten on up through fifth grade, K through five. And I was I was Mrs. Davis, the computer teacher, you know, even though that's how they saw me, even though I was really the site technician, I was in charge of managing the labs, but I was also put in, you know, I wore many, many hats, and I was put into the role of teaching the kids, you know, once a month they would be mine for, you know, all the different grade levels. And I would work with these children, teaching them how to use technology. You know, even just keyboarding skills. We would have sometimes I would sit down with a tiny little chair, and I was towards the end of it, I was, you know, 8-9 months pregnant. So can you imagine a pregnant woman sitting in one of those teeny tiny little chairs? Yeah, they're very strong. They're very sturdy. And I've actually had the privilege of sitting down with a little first grader. I love first graders. And going toe-to-toe between comparing Tux Paint with KidPix. And, I mean, those, because we were migrating from OS 9 to OS 10 up to Tiger. That was part of my job, was to upgrade the entire school. And this school had, you know, minimum 160 computers on a network. So it was a lot of, you know, imaging and things like that. And I did it all while pregnant. So I do multitask. So what I learned from that was kind of getting down, even on your hands and knees, if need be, to get down to their level and see things through their eyes. That's what, and I've always had a soft spot for the elderly. I've just always gravitated towards older people. I really like hanging with older people because they're wise and mm-hmm. you learn so much from them. But you also learn so much from a little child when you look at the world through their eyes. It's just so eye-opening. And so my joke is that I often say my favorite age range to work with, I love 7-year-olds and I love 77-year-olds. Those are, you know, my favorite ages. That's about what I've worked with. So I've worked with little kids and the elderly. I mean, people anywhere from 65 on up through 80 something, you know. And so I kind of do the job that other people might not want to do. You know, it's hard, even with my own parents, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
So I would say, if I think I remember your question, the biggest challenge is explaining things in a way that they can understand it. And so you have to look at things the way that they look at things. So with a child, you have to kind of observe and get down onto their level and look at how they view technology, which is quite differently from adults. Or one of the biggest challenges, I think, is that we all take for granted so many simple little things. Just even when you say things, it slays me when people say, hit the return key or hit the enter key. Well, what does that mean to a child, you know, a 7-year-old or a 77-year-old? You want me to hit it? You want me to smack it? You know what I mean? Like, oh, no, press the key that says return on the keyboard. I mean, you have to specify on the keyboard because they're looking, you know, all over the place. So that's the challenge, is to really simplify things, but not in a way that makes them feel like condescending. So that's what I've been, you know, over the years honing with. And you know, they all tell me that I have so much patience. You know, you have to have patience. You have to really love what you do. You have to be patient with the person, and you have to not take for granted that they just understand everything that you're saying. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem that my elderly clients always say, that, you know, they'll go to the Apple store. The Apple store is a wonderful place, right? But they don't enjoy it as much as having someone come on their turf, come into their home and sit down and, like, almost literally hold their hand at times. And you know, I will actually, yeah, and speak to them
in a way that they understand.
In their language that they understand. And it's not some young kid, you know. I mean, I'm in my late 30s now. And so I'm at a really perfect age, actually, because I'm just old enough to know what an adding machine is or an abacus or, you know, some of these terms that they throw around. They'll say, oh, yeah, you're probably too young to know this. And I actually do understand a lot of the things that they tell me about, because I do pay attention to the stories that my grandparents have told me. And I have experienced some of those things. In fact, I love retro tech. You know, I love to one time we went out, one of the few times we went out on a date night, and we went to this bar, and there was this old telephone machine, like the old switchboard that had the, you know, the plugs and everything. And I had to take a picture of it with my iPhone because I just thought it was so cool. You know, I still have all this old tech, you know, surrounding me.
Do you think that there is something like being technologically bilingual, where you say, I speak the language of the now and I speak the language of the people mm-hmm. who we need to draw into technology?
Yes, there's your digital natives and your digital immigrants. Mm-hmm. And I feel personally that I'm kind of squarely planted in between those two sectors. I'm not necessarily a digital native, but I'm kind of a digital immigrant in a way. And so I feel like I'm, you know, the immigration office, I guess you could say, and I help people kind of get their footing.
One of the crazy things that you brought up is that I've given several talks at work about the X and the Y generation, explaining mm-hmm. to people who are digital immigrants how digital natives think and what the difference mm-hmm. is. And I explained to digital natives what digital immigrants think like. I mean, mm-hmm. work is like life. A computer is like my social life, or a computer is like my work life. I try mm-hmm. to kind of put the Dolly Parton generation against the Mark Zuckerberg generation. And mm-hmm. it is always very interesting to see when I give that talk, and something that you mentioned here as well, it's not about technological knowledge, it's about culture, a fundamental yeah. difference in culture of the mm-hmm. pre-digital or well, or the digital, actually, and the neo-digital age, where people have come into the digital age and are now surrounded by information everywhere.
And yeah, it's so easy to take advantage of those things. And, you know, even just younger kids, I mean, my children, they know what a DVD is, but they don't understand a CD. You know what I mean? Like, and there's things that they will just never really comprehend. And people tease me. Now, I will say that, you know, when you ask, how do I, you know, do what I do? Quite frankly, I mean, and that's why I call myself the Mac Mommy, because I use mothering in technology. I mean, just like an educator, I actually really do feel like this sounds weird, but I feel like I mother people with technology. You know, I'm very gentle about it. And, you know, I'll even, like, you know, sometimes when I'm working with an elderly person, I'll even try to describe to them what it means to double tap on something on a trackpad, because that's a very new thing to them. I mean, they just now finally got used to using a mouse.
Yep.
And now we're shifting from clicking to tapping and touching. And that's a real big challenge lately, is trying to teach people how to, we so take it for granted, right? You pick up an iPhone and we just swipe and we tap and we pinch and zoom and all that kind of stuff. And this is so foreign to them. And so sometimes I actually have to, you know, take their hand and just, I say, okay, you want to tap it like this or like this, you know, and actually I touch their hand and try to give them the tactile feedback that they need to give the device. You know, or sometimes they'll say, you know, you have to go like this with your hands because their skin is very dry. We, you and I, we're young, we take that for granted, you know, but their skin is, they're older, their skin is very dry. And so sometimes their skin doesn't make the proper contact with the screen. And that's just something that people take for granted. And you, you always hear the joke about, oh, you know, the baby who sat there and just, you know, took an iPad, you know, picked up a magazine, a paper magazine, and was trying to swipe it like an iPad, you know. And you get two different kinds of reactions about that. You get the, on one side of the fence, it's people who are like, oh my gosh, what is this world coming to that, you know, kids think when they pick up something paper, that's a, it's a digital device. And oh my gosh, we're going to hell in a handbasket, you know. And I really, really reject that view. And I think to myself, okay, sit down and think about this. Yes, we're talking about a baby here who is holding a paper instrument for reading, you know, reading material. When that child is your age, they're going to be swiping air, you know, or it's going to be some kind of like ocular implant or something like that. So don't talk to me about what is this world coming to. You need to accept that this is their world, not yours. This is their world. And we need to encourage that. I know a lot of parents who, you know, they're appalled at the fact that I can give my children my iPhone, you know, like, oh, I don't know if I want my child to interact with technology that much. You know, people are really afraid of it. And I say the earlier, the better. Just expose them to it. And the older people are very embracing of technology. It's the people in between us that are very fearful. And I think that has, I have a philosophy about that. I think that has a lot to do with, I would say, the Vietnam generation and the whole, you know, big brother, untrusting of government, untrusting of, you know, this the Google, you know, and information. And they don't understand information harvesting or data mining and that sort of thing. And they just think everything's evil and everybody's out to get them. They're very, my dad's come a long way, but my dad's very like big brother conspiracy. You know, he thinks, he refuses to do most online banking. Like he'll check things, he'll check balances and stuff, but he has never made an online purchase and he really just doesn't want to do that. And that's another challenge that I've had to try to overcome, or that I work with, is to not push people. You just don't want to push people. You know, if you, you kind of have to sit back and say, okay, if you're not ready to do that, we'll work around it. But that is a huge challenge, because I always get, you know, the question, well, I got this in an email, or I saw this on television and I want to do this, but you know, that would involve you creating an online account that you would have to log into and that you would have to submit your financial credentials to. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't want to do that. You know, it's like they don't realize that there are things have to happen in a certain order, you know, so.
I think it's an amazing topic we absolutely inadvertently open up here, but that's the great thing about the interview, because it's taking something that's also really close to me, because I'm an educator by heart. I always look at technology and people around technology and people who tune technology into their way of life.
I really resonate with that.
it's a cultural thing. It's about the people. It's about the users. It's not about the technology. And the way they use the technology is more important than the technology itself. As a mother, that's one thing I really want to ask you. If you see, I go back to the video that you mentioned of the one-year-old girl swiping the iPad, which the first time I saw it literally choked me up because I was moved by it and by the sheer awesomeness of what are the things to come. And I look back at the, at the 15 years that I've been in technology professionally and seen the change, and then I think like, whoa, we have no idea of what's ahead. As a mother, where do you think it go? Because you have the two camps, man. Your kids should go out in the street and play. And then you have the other camp to say, well, kids should interact with technology. Well, the kids that sit on the couch playing the PlayStation thing, they're all going to shoot people later. And then they go down the other hand, people who kids who sit outside on the street all day are never going to turn into something and stuff like that. What's the middle ground for your personal opinion as a parent? Completely technologize them or keep them away from it?
Oh, no. I think you have to have a balance. And you as a parent have to decide where that middle ground is. Like for me, for instance, I mean, I grew up, both my husband and I grew up, we fight over the whole TV thing. He grew up with always having the television on because his parents always, you know, they lived in Germany for a time and always wanted to watch the news. You know, even my dad, he's always like, did you see in the news, you know, this, that, and the other thing? I'm like, no, Dad, I don't watch the news. I get my news from people. I really reject, you know, media outlets and that sort of thing. But that's a whole other story. So he's used to having the television on as background noise. In fact, he prefers to fall asleep to TV, and I don't. Like, and I don't want the children watching so much television. And I mean, he's really into comics and all the superheroes and stuff like that. And I realized that my little boys would like to be exposed to that sort of thing too. And now, you know, they love Iron Man and Spider-Man and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you have to have a balance. So between us two as parents, you know, he kind of like lets them watch TV. I don't. You know, and so he's with them, you know, on the weeknights and the weekends, and I'm with them predominantly at home during the week. So I limit their TV exposure. I think there's a time and a place for it. For a while there, I was kind of like on an anti-TV kind of campaign, but then I realized that it was detrimental because like Keegan has a language delay, but now I've started having him watch Blue's Clues and I see a great improvement. Because that really is educational. It helps them. I agree that, you know, they say you shouldn't, and I say they, I'm talking about like, you know, the pediatric associations and things like that. They say you shouldn't expose children to screen time of any sort, not just TV, but iPads and iPhones and whatever. But I disagree. I don't think you should keep them completely away from it because I think it is very educational. I think what they need to stay away from is things that are brain rot. Like, I know I'm going to get chastised for this, but I personally can't stand SpongeBob. You know, people, for some reason, it's loved by people like in their 40s and 50s. Like, they just love SpongeBob. I think it's kind of stupid. I don't get anything. There's nothing beneficial or educational about it. Mm-hmm. And just like you, because of having an educational background. And I think it's because I've seen how the sausage is made, so to speak. And I've been behind the scenes and I've seen children interact with technology and interact in school. And the things that have come into when I was a computer tech out of school, the people, the children and teachers that have been in my computer labs, I've seen some things that I really just don't like, that I just think are wrong, you know, or things where we're losing touch with. Like, there's benchmarks that children are supposed to have met. For instance, like, you know, when they get to first grade, they should be able to write a letter to Santa Claus. You know, they should be able to write their name and address on an envelope. And I tried to do an exercise with, I think it was third graders at the time, where I wanted to teach them how to, on the computer, type out their name and their address on an envelope. That's what we were going to do, I made a template, and we were going to have them, instead of, I was using the whole Santa Claus thing, instead of writing it out in pencil, is type it out on a computer keyboard. And it was a disaster. It was a train wreck. I mean, first of all, the kids had to come in with note cards, 3x5 note cards, that some of their parents had handwritten, and then you could barely read the handwriting, hence the keyboarding. Handwriting, I mean, that's a whole other topic, but handwriting, learning to actually hold a stylus of some sort, a pen, pencil, and write, is becoming a lost art. And even my mother-in-law, who's an occupational therapist aide, you know, makes the point that even for the disabled challenged, the biggest goal that they try to get to with those kids is to be able to teach them how to create a legible signature. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Because really, if you think about it, you know, you talk about their world in the future, where do I see it going? I mean, my children know how to play with crayons, and they know how to draw, and they know Lucian has beautiful penmanship, because that's something that I valued as a child growing up, and I have nice handwriting. Now, my husband's a teacher and writes on a whiteboard and a smart board, and he has terrible handwriting, and he knows it, you know, because it just wasn't something. It depends on your priorities as a parent. For me, handwriting and good penmanship is a priority, even though, and it's sad to say, I know that this is probably a skill that he won't necessarily need later in life too much. You know what I mean? How much are they really going to write on paper with a pen? You know, it's just...
You have to balance it out. Can say, if you teach handwriting, balance. He has to also know, has to know his keyboard skills. Or even now, I see a world in 5 years where even keyboard skills are becoming irrelevant.
Oh, that's already, in fact, just within the last 5 years, 5-6 years. Yeah. So since right before Lucian was born, when I was teaching, you know, I was basically told by the media specialist librarian, you know, that this is how we need to teach the kids keyboarding, A, S, D, F, you know, proper, you know, home keys and that sort of thing. And the funny thing is I never learned that. And believe it or not, this will really blow your mind, is my start in professionalism, I guess you could say. I mean, I studied commercial art when I was in school, and advertising and graphic design and typography. And I was a professional typesetter for many, many years before I did that. But I never, I'm a touch typist. I never really was taught to properly
put your hands type. Down.
And yet, yeah. And yet I have a very high accuracy and high speed on the keyboard. But you know how I learned it was through I guess it's a compensation kind of skill. I learned it mostly through chatting.
Yep,
through chatting on, you know, and bulletin boards, and because I always had this quest for knowledge, and so you had to be able to keep up with the conversation, and I learned it that way. And so now I kind of reject the idea of having to teach kids A, S, D, F, and home keys. You know, they have all these, you know, Mavis speaking, teaches typing, you know.
The one thing that I see, if we can call it a word, I call it digital parenting, where you basically bring people into the digital world. I also used to be a consultant in my free time for a couple of years, and have brought people over the verge. One of the major examples that I was brag of is my hairdresser. They have a wife, kids, his wife, his two beautiful kids. They have come over the threshold of having one laptop to now owning two Macs, having the full setup, downloading movies, showing them on the TV. Uh-huh. The kids are running around, one with a Linux laptop, one with a Windows laptop. It's a cross-platform household. It's really, it is my, you can see the Nightwise signature just written in their digital DNA, going like, this is a Linux user, this is a Windows user, and those are two Macs, and you can all play together.
You should be very proud of that monster you created.
I am. But what I always see is that when you bring them into the world, just teaching people to do stuff like typing is indeed the hardest part, where you'd basically say, how come you type so fast? I always say, you know, I chat with 15 people at the same time. You have to type fast. You have two kids, open MSN, go online, and you will be typing fast in no time. So
that people would be appalled to know that I set up my five-year-old with his own Skype account, his own Google Voice account, and he texts me and his father. And he's five.
But that's one question that we always come back to. If you put a kid behind the computer, he becomes asocial. He doesn't know how to interact with the real world.
Quite the opposite, actually.
Is it indeed? But and then you have the fear response. Okay, we'll hook little Neo up to the Matrix here. But what about all the predators out there? That's the second fear response. But everything on the internet is bad. Everybody who's above, who's above 18 is a potential predator. We have to take care of our kids. Is it once again a balance there between, you know, the computer on or off or the TV on or off?
Yeah, it's all about education. You have to educate the kids. It's like, gun control. I mean, you know, you have to teach kids how to use the instrument and that there are consequences and that there are dangers. And the internet is no different. I've actually, and you have to be a responsible parent too, and know that there's a time and a place for everything. With, say, for instance, with Lucian's iPod, he has his own iPod, you know, him and Keegan share it. And I know that they'll get into trouble with just tapping on things in apps. So I have disabled the ability for them to even go to the App Store. I have disabled in the parental controls. I've disabled Safari. I've disabled YouTube. He knows what YouTube is. Keegan knows how to. Keegan's two. And just the other night, he took his daddy's iPhone and navigated, you know, three pages away, launched Netflix, and started watching Blue's Clues. And he did this in the store. I have this really cool little clippy thing that I put on the stroller. And I don't go out very often, but when I do, it's really difficult to, you know, kind of keep the kids safe and in check and everything. And you would have loved to see this. I should have taken pictures, but my iPhone was actually in use at the time. But I had him all set up in his stroller because I really needed to shop for luggage and I needed to concentrate on pulling zippers and inspecting threads and all that kind of stuff. And so I had Keegan all set up in a stroller with snacks and his water cup. And I had my iPhone clamped to this little thing that clamps onto the stroller. Mm-hmm. And he was playing Angry Birds. And I mean, he's two. And he was just navigating, you know, pressing the home button. He goes back. He was switching through different apps. Like sometimes I'll see him. He loves to play Angry Birds Space, but he's two. And I can't even play Angry Birds Space. I mean, it's just a really totally different physics paradigm there. And so he'll get stuck. And so I'll say, well, let's switch over to Seasons. You know, oh, no. He switches it back to Angry Birds Space. He knows they all know how they have to wait. Then when he got bored with that, I said, you know, he started getting a little bit fidgety and we just had a little bit left to go. I still had to check out and I said, well, you know, do you want to watch Blue's Clues? So right there in the store over my 4G signal, he was watching Blue's Clues on Netflix. And then every once in a while you have to check over because, I mean, Netflix, you know, he could go in and watch something adult or something, which, see, he doesn't because he doesn't have an interest in that. He recognizes the thumbnails and the icons.
Yeah.
So even if there was like an adult-oriented movie of some sort, he wouldn't pick it because, you know, I mean, maybe he would.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah. So he actually, I looked down to check to, you know, I didn't hear Blue's Clues anymore. You know, you're kind of like tuned in and kind of like, you know, checking every once in a while. And I looked down and he had switched it over to Wallace and Gromit. He's two.
And that's it. What I, when we talk to, let's say that middle generation, because sometimes for the elderly, it's sometimes an advantage. People who haven't worked with computers and a keyboard, you give them a touch interface, like something like an iPod or an iPad or an Android tablet, and they go like, okay, it comes to them, it somehow becomes natural because they never know the thing in between. And then we have let's call them the next generation, you know, the Geordies and the Picards. They are also starting out with these. And we in the middle generation, we're the keyboard and mouse clickers. The mouse clickers, we say like, wow, how come they catch on to this? Is it actually us that's getting old?
I think, you know, some people just have a better ability to adapt or accept change. Mm-hmm. And some people just don't. And it kind of depends on your personality, how you were raised. You know, maybe some people are just really stuck and just want to do the same thing the same way, and they don't want it changed on them. My parents' generation is a lot like that. You know, you think that you're doing something nice by going in and, you know, quote unquote, cleaning up their computer, and
you move the icon.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't matter that their desktop was completely, you know, a mess and stuff all over the place, which, I mean, personally, I don't believe you should ever keep anything on the desktop anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it doesn't matter if it took them 6 clicks to do one thing. If you change it on them, they don't know. And I've said this before, it's like taking a blind person's apartment and rearranging it on them while they're gone. When they come back, they're going to trip over everything because they're used to feeling their way around. They're used to being able to make a beeline to, you know, the table, and now you've moved something, you know, in their way. And it's just like that. It's muscle memory. Mm-hmm. You know, and you get accustomed to that sort of thing. And so it's very hard to change muscle memory, brain memory. It's really hard to adapt and change to that. I even do it with myself. Before I became like a trainer, educator, consultant, I used to work in the graphics and production industry. And I used to have my workstation all tweaked out with, you know, special, you know, quick key commands and things, you know, things that didn't exist in the interface. I would program it so that all I had to do was, you know, a key combination. They called me Fast Fingers, you know, and if you wanted something done, you give it to me and I can, you know, bang it out. But then ask me a question and I have to go to somebody else's cubicle and sit down in front of their computer and I'm completely lost. You know, it's like, I have to stop, wait, okay, what was the original menu for that? Oh, darn it. You know? And so I don't screw myself. I try to keep things as pure as I can. You know, people always talk about Text Expander and all these other tools that, and they're fantastic. And I do use some of them, but I have to be careful what I start allowing myself to use for efficiency's sake, because it kind of, it takes me away from the purest
way of working as well. You can really, that's something I also mentioned in that talk. I gave the talk at a local school to the teachers and stuff a short while ago, where I basically say, like, with someone from the X generation. Now, we call it X generation because it's kind of relative. It doesn't have to do anything with age. For them, you know, having the things the way they are is fine. They can be as standard as possible, please. When we take a look at the tweaker generation, if I take a look at what people do with a Linux desktop, it's like, wow, you've kind of terraformed the kernel here. You've made something completely new. So the feeling between is very, very interesting. What I want to ask you as a next question, and that's something that we see, we live in an interesting time of change where basically mobile and the desktop are flowing together. And how do you see technology evolve in the coming 2 or 3 years? And how do you see not only that technology per se, but the uptake of that technology in civilization or in the community or in a country or in you know, people in general, through all of those layers, like the elderly, the midsection, the younger? How do you see the uptake? Basically, how do you see technology change, and how do you see people adapting to it or adapting it into their lives?
The short answer is not fast enough. It can't happen fast enough. I think, unfortunately, I really do see a very slow progressing change. You and I live in a really different world from the way that things really, really are in a lot of places. Just for the very first time, I saw an advertisement that came home in Lucian's backpack for something. And I can't even remember what it was because I got distracted by the logos, but it was something that people could sign up for, and they showed the method of payments. And, you know, we're so accustomed to seeing the Discover and the MasterCard and the Visa. In fact, I mean, you know, it used to only be that you only ever saw MasterCard and Visa logos. Yeah. And then along came Discover. And then every once in a while, you'll see American Express. Well, for the very, very first time, I saw a Square logo as a form of accepted payment. And I just, that blew me away. I was like, I've known about Square for the longest time. I have one of those little dongles. I never use it, but it was just fascinating to me that, you know, I finally saw something. It's like when you hear different language spoken and all of a sudden you hear like a word or two that pops up in your native language and your ears perk up, you know? So every once in a while I'll see things just like when, I mean, we've been using Twitter and Facebook forever. And then when it became mainstream and then you started seeing the logos everywhere, you're like, oh yeah, I know what that is, you know?
The thing I think is always the hardest with that is that sometimes people walk up to, I think we can call ourselves, you know, we are early adopters. I don't want to be an elitist,
right?
Not at all, because I think we, as early adopters, know we don't know squat. But sometimes somebody from the gray area, from the big gray mass, you know, the people who were for Twitter the first time on TV, they come up to me and they say like, "Oh, Nightwise, but I've got something for you. I found this thing, and it's called Twitter." And I always have to fight not to roll my eyes because they're so enthusiastic about it. And you really have to pretend that it's the greatest thing in the world. It's the equivalent of somebody coming up to you and saying, "I've gone outside and the sky is blue." And they're so proud of it. I think that's the hardest part of acting.
You're thinking, when I was your age, we had to walk a mile in the snow. I remember when, you know, there were only like a couple hundred people on Twitter. And, you know, I remember back when Facebook was something for college kids and professionals, you know.
But in that account, we're at the breach, we're at the brink or at the cutting edge of the evolving technology. We are becoming old people in our own technological generation.
It's almost in a way becoming like a desensitization to it. You know, something new comes along and you think, and then also things like Twitter become a benchmark. Well, is it as good as Twitter, you know, or can it do this? You know, you're used to, you know, and in a lot of respects we are just like that. It's kind of hard to resist change. It's hard to adopt something else that comes along. You know, I've just started doing that. In other words, for example, when Pinterest came along, you know, I saw it early on, and normally, you know, my first reaction is like, all right, I got to hop on and I got to go see what this is. And I actually tried to resist the temptation. And of course, you and I both know resistance is futile. I mean, there's just no resisting it. You just can't. And so finally, I did, you know, accept, I think it was an invitation, even though I don't think I even needed one, but just out of courtesy, I think it was, or something. I signed on and I thought, oh yeah, this is the new internet crack. Yeah. And right away, you know, I started playing with it. I just played with it again last night. In fact, it's all your fault because you pointed me to a website for an artist. His name escapes me at the moment, that does the Muppets and Star Wars. And I ended up showing my husband the paintings. And so I have a shopping cart there with $70 in it now. Thank you very much. Yeah, I've got Christmas presents lined up for that. But, you know, I pinned it. You can go see it. I actually pinned it. I made a Pinterest board that's called, I think it's called Hacks. And that's where I decided to pin that one. Because to me, that was like art hacking, you know, and I just was fascinated by it. So, but anyway, the original point is that, you know, I've gotten to a point in early adoption where I've actually had to hold myself back from trying so many things because there's just so much going on right now. And I used to just jump into everything. I mean, I have this whole long, you know, it's the point now where my bookmarks list of all my login accounts is so long that it scrolls, you know what I mean, for all the identities. You know, I just jump on everything. So I started resisting, but yeah, resistance is futile. So you might as well just try it all. But now, you know, of course, I can justify that because I am a tinkerer by nature. And this is what I do.
And it is, and so, it is our duty as
it is our duty.
It is our duty as spearheads of that technology to, you know, turn around and yell to the flock, hey guys, try this out, this does this and that and that.
It's a duty as a parent, you know, for me particularly as a mother, I think it's my parental obligation or responsibility to try to, you know, jump on and figure this stuff out before my kids get to it. And I know there's going to come a time where that wave is just going to wash over me and I'll have, you know, my kids will start talking about some other social thing. I'll be like, what? You know, but I mean, it goes back to balance. You know, you have to try to find a balance. And I've been, you know, struggling with that. And I won't dare say that I have it all figured out. I don't. But I am striving towards a balance. I think that's the most important part, is to try to find that balance. So no, I don't let my kids watch, you know, TV all day long. They go days without watching TV. They go absolute, you know, days without us ever turning on the television. And actually, we don't watch cable TV. We have been cable TV free. We have cut the cord for many years now, for at least 2 or 3 years now, and everything is internet. So my husband and I actually pick all the content that they watch. And that doesn't mean that we're control freaks or anything, but it also means that my children, even when they do watch TV, they're watching something that we've usually 99% of the time approved or screened. I mean, we can't watch everything, you know, but I mean, like, I know my kids love Phineas and Ferb, and sometimes I watch it and I think, this is really not all that educational. It's kind of stupid, but you know, you do have to let them have some fun with some things, and it seems mostly harmless from the episodes that I have watched, you know. But I mean, I'll get sucked into a Pixar movie like anything, and then I'll be like, oh, I was supposed to make dinner, wasn't I? All right, kids, time for chicken nuggets. You know, so I guess, you know, I'm a bad parent sometimes, and you know, everything in moderation. So yeah, my kids will go days without watching TV, and then, you know, next thing you know, I'm that mom who is, you know, shopping, which I rarely ever get to do, but the time that I do get to do it, I'm going to go all out and do it in style, right? I'm going to hook my kid up to an iPhone.
Digital IV. Know,
right. And he's going to sit there, you know, totally engrossed in Angry Birds and Netflix while mommy shops, you know? If only I had time for a pedicure.
I think what we are becoming, you as a parent and the cyber citizens out there that are basically in charge of their own feeds, is that we're becoming the curators of our own minds. We're getting all this knowledge off the internet. We're basically, the TV used to feed us streams of content, pre-selected, pre-cut and dried and pumped out, where now we have this giant palette of information and are responsible for spending 15 hours a week on Reddit or listening to TED Talks in the morning or stuff like that. Yeah. I think it's the same thing as a parent.
Instead of the spoon being forced down our throats, we now hold the spoon. We choose what we want to spoon feed our kids.
That is, how do you deal with that responsibility? Do you think at a certain age you let go of that control, let them seek their own interest, or what's the take on that?
Oh, yeah. They're already making their own choices, you know, especially Lucian. I mean, he's in kindergarten now. And things like even just his I'm realizing that. That's something that I'm in the process of learning. It used to be that whenever I configured a computer or a device for them, I would set it up how I thought it should be. And I would put the icons in this order and you know, and so on and so forth. And now, you know, Lucian has the freedom to rearrange his own icons. And it's almost like giving a kid a camera and seeing what they take a picture of. You know, I hand him, he has his own device now. I mean, I manage it ultimately, but whenever he wants to buy an app, you know, he has to work for it and earn so many, you know, stars on his chore chart. And like, he so badly wants to buy Angry Birds Space, but his poor little iPod is too old to be able to run it. So I told him that he could buy the Mac version And I have a Mac set up as a media center, and so we can sit back on the bed with a wireless mouse and play Angry Birds to heart's content while I kind of hold that over his head a little bit. So he's got to work for Angry Birds, you know. But he rearranges his apps, you know, his way. He's, you know, starting to make choices about, you know, he changes his desktop and he, you know, changes his launch pad, you know, and I'm okay with that now. It used to kind of bug me. I'm like, I just rearranged all these. I just spent all day. You know, rearranging all these icons, and you went and put them in folders, and why did you, you know what? Stop. It's not my device. It's his device, and it's his, he's personalizing it his way, and he's learning about it. Same thing with Keegan. I mean, the only thing I don't like is when they delete stuff on me.
Okay.
But if they want to move things around, that's fine.
I think we're coming into an interesting age of parenting where we basically are going to say, my he made a shirt. It's not like he did his first word today, but he kind of made his first, he made his first shortcut today, or he made his first bookmark. You know, here's a picture of you making your first bookmark, and here's a picture of you downloading your first app from the iTunes store.
Oh, and you better believe I have screenshots of the first couple of texts that he sent me. I even posted it. You probably saw it. He texted me and he used every single emoticon in the whole like little dictionary there. It took him about, you know, an hour.
It's going to be such an interesting time where our kids grow up and are going to say, and, you know, they kind of bring their girlfriend home and mommy sits there with her iPad and going like, or some tablet device that we use in the future going like, look, and this was the screenshot of his first desktop. And it's going to be that embarrassing picture of your first desktop.
I actually disagree. I don't think it's going to matter, Hill of Beans, when that time comes. I wonder about that. And other parents tease me about it whenever I, you know, take pictures and post them on the internet. And, you know, they've gotten to an age now where one time I shot a little video of them dancing around their underwear. And, you know, I have to have set a boundary, a healthy boundary about, you know, I'm not going to post pictures of my kids that are nude, you know, as much as I have naked pictures of them. I mean, they're so cute. You know, like I posted a picture of Keegan's little bare bottom on a tricycle, and I thought it was artistic and everything, but I know other parents that are probably like abhorred at like, oh my God, you showed your child's flesh on the internet, you know? I mean, there are some kind of gray areas there, but I do try to set boundaries. And now that they're older, like especially with Lucian, I'll actually ask his permission. You know, can I post this? Are you okay with that? I mean, most of the times he says yes because he's a five-year-old little ham, you know, but there's going to come an age where I'm sure he's going to grow feathers and become embarrassed. But it just seems to me that with all of that we share today, I wonder if, as they get older, are they going to be embarrassed? What kinds of things are going to embarrass them? I don't think the things that embarrass you and I, or have embarrassed you and I as a kid, that our parents did on purpose, because I think every parent or grandparent does that. I mean, for the longest time, there was a picture of me, stark naked at 2 years old, standing by the bathtub in my grandparents' living room for all to see. And it used to really bug me. And then I got over it, you know, and now I have that same picture that my grandmother gave to me. It's like a family heirloom now. And now it's in my dining room, you know, and I just think that I think our kids are going to be embarrassed by different things. And I don't know what that is, but I don't think it's going to be the same things that embarrassed us. I think they're living online, whether they know it or not. And that's a whole other question is like, well, you know, there's a lot of parents who think that the children, they haven't made this decision for themselves. So how dare you make it for them? You know, they should be able to determine whether or not they get circumcised or whether or not they, you know, want an internet, you know, a Facebook account. I mean, there are parents that have created against the rules, you know, Facebook accounts for their babies, and they're on Facebook and Twitter, you know, yeah,
which is, you know, you're here. Let's just reserve your avatar.
Exactly. That's how we think. It's like, well, we have to claim a spot for them because there's going to be some other kid with that name. You know, you have to, you know, register their domain name. And, you know, we think of that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of parents who just think that's either silly or wrong, just flat out wrong. So
I don't know.
I wrestle with that a lot.
I've seen Facebook accounts of unborn children, which are very interesting to follow. And they post things. They go like, yeah, I've been knocking against mama's womb today.
It's funny.
And I've got 3 weeks until I come. And you go like, okay, it's not real. It's a very, very proud parent doing this. But in the end, that Facebook account is reserved.
Right. And I personally don't see anything wrong with that. And I think it's cool. But I know parents and I have some relatives that I know people who, for instance, they are really, really against their child having a digital footprint at all. I have to be careful. And I respect other people's feelings. It may not be mine, but it's not my child either. So even at birthday parties, and it is frustrating that we live kind of in this age yet, but it is what it is. So even at birthday parties, if I'm snapping pictures and stuff, I usually clear it with my parent friends first. You know, is it okay if I post this on Facebook? Most times, most of them are like, yes, please do. And can you tag me in it so that I'll get it? And, you know, that sort of thing. We kind of have like an arrangement worked out. But there are a few people that I know are really sensitive to it. I have a cousin who he does not want his children, like he doesn't even send out emails. Like he just does not want his children to have a digital footprint at all. Not yet anyway. At least he doesn't think that it's his decision to make.
But then they come to that age where the light jumps to green and daddy says, okay, here is...
Yeah, and then they're not going to be prepared. And
here's the rest of the world. And they get blown away. But I always put it like they say, like, yeah, you shouldn't have to let your children be on the internet. I talk to parents like that, and I've talked to teachers going like, yeah, students and the internet and Wikipedia, it's all blah. And I go like, look, I had the great honor and privilege of listening to Jimmy Wales talk, seeing him talk when he came to Belgium last year. I said Wikipedia is the most magnificent thing that's out there. And they go like, yeah, but they should study in books. And I go like, people,
that
please.
Is their books.
That is books. It used to be a time where, you know what? Wikipedia, something like an encyclopedia. And now people say, oh, an encyclopedia. That's something like Wikipedia, but in a book. So the paradigm shifts. But I always say, keeping your kids...
But not quickly enough.
Yeah, but
we are mired in bureaucracy and red tape and government, control. The government here, at least, is so behind the times. You know, I thought it laughable, like when President Obama was coming into office, that they were like, oh, we might have to take his BlackBerry. Like, oh, come on, seriously? You know, I mean, we just and I see it in schools all the time. And a lot of it has to do with funding. And it's all tied up with money. And oh, my gosh, we could have a whole other show talking about, you know, what it's like to be a site technician and how, you know, I wanted to move these computers that had these, you know, better operating systems and better, you know, hardware into this area because they wanted to do DVD birding and they wanted to do these things, but I couldn't because they were purchased with these funds and they had to stay in this area where they're only used for the internet and that's it. You know, it's it's maddening. And there's so many limitations.
Yes, but I think that budget is not one of them. I talk to the educational sector and I always get, we don't have the budget. I say like, look, if money's tight, that's when you become the most innovative person that you can be.
It's priority.
These days when I go talk at work about new things and stuff like that, they're like, yeah, but money's tight. I thought like, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm thinking crazy thoughts. That's why why I get like this, because money's tight. If we had money,
they don't know any better.
Yeah,
they'll jump at the chance to, you know, they get a deal on all these, you know, hardware or whatever.
Just buy it.
Just buy it because, yeah, well, we have a budget for this and this and this. But did you ever think to consult with your tech first? You know, what if they'll this is the worst thing that I've seen is, you know, some sales pitch person. And I know you've done this for history. Maybe you can relate. But some sales people will come in and meet with the principal. OK, not necessarily the media specialist or the technologist, but the principal, whoever holds the purse strings. And they sell them on it and they're like, oh, but it can measure these benchmarks and stuff. And then, oh, yes, we will spend, you know, $7,000 on this software, and then come to find out that, wait a minute, it won't even run. Your computers in your lab don't even meet the system requirements. Did you ever think to, you know, well, we're going to write this, you know, this digital thing into the curriculum and we want the kids to learn this, but, okay, you want them to produce this, but on what? you know, or, you know, the priorities are so skewed, and it makes me so mad because they don't think about working with what you have and maximizing it. Just like you say all the time, let the technology work for you, not the other way around. It really is not a priority in the places where it really, really needs to be. So the adoption is just so slow. It's not, I don't think the right people are in the right positions making the right decisions. I don't think they're asking the minions.
The one thing that when I worked for the educational sector, and again, we have a parallel here. I worked for seven schools, and the one thing, they hired me to be basically a side tech, and they just keep our computers running and that's it. So I said, look, why? What do you mean, mm-hmm. why? I said, why do you want me to keep your computers running? Well, basically because we have to, you know, do something with the computers. I said, okay, here's the word. Whenever I hear a principal, a manager say the word something, I get mm-hmm. nervous. I say, why? Yeah. Because, you know, we have to do something with IT. I said, look, IT is a toaster. Your students yes. are white bread. Your knowledge is strawberry jam. And your mm-hmm. toaster will help get the strawberry jam on the toasted white bread. That mm-hmm. is what IT is. You have dirty laundry. I'm your washing machine. You get clean laundry. Mm-hmm. I am just, IT is just a means. And
right, a facilitation.
Yeah, and then you start talking to teachers and you start asking the question, what do you want to do with it? What do you want to teach with it? How do you want to
use it? What is your task?
What is your goal? Yeah, what do you want? Right. You get these half sentences and they drive me mm-hmm. crazy. You know, we have to do something with something IT. Something IT. I like the fact that you know, there's not a word in between and they are completely vague. I always get worked up when I talk about it. And they go, yeah, we have to do something with social media. We have to do social media too. Why? Right. Well, I don't know why. I know, because everybody does it. Oh, well, that's nice. In that case, we need to, I don't know, jump out of the window because, you know, some people do it and it's very successful to them. But that's...
Well, what do you ultimately want the kids to learn, you know?
That's it.
I mean, even little kindergartners, I like to tell the story of there was a kindergarten class and a teacher that was just really, really struggling with what she wanted. You know, the question was, well, what do you want? She wanted the kids to be able to draw little self-portraits of themselves. I mean, and I kind of fleshed out this idea for her. But she didn't know the first thing about even teaching a child how to grasp a mouse and click and drag. Something we just take for granted. And she was so struggling with this, but she was the teacher. I wasn't in a position to do that, you know? And so I offered my help and I said, would you like me to teach this class for you? I would be happy to do it. And she was a little reluctant, you know, because she didn't want to kind of give up her authority. And so she did. And then I showed the kids, you know, this is how, you know, let's start at the beginning. This is a mouse. It's a pointing device. This is how you use it. Because if you ever watch a little kid, when they run out of room, they push the keyboard over out of the way. They don't know how to pick it up and then continue. So I was teaching them those kinds of basic things. And we worked with Tux Paint. I said, okay, how you do this is like, imagine you have a rubber band and you're stretching it out. And, you know, you give them tangible things that they can visualize because this is a very abstract concept. Mm-hmm. And so we got through it and we ended up having the kids, I mean, they were just having so much fun with it, just being able to draw and stamp and scribble and utilize all of these little drawing tools. And I ended up with, you know, this awful, awful computer lab was just so gray and dingy and mundane. And by the end of the school year, I had this beautiful, like, long mural of all these little kindergarten self-portraits that were made in Tux Paint. And just, you know, after I was able to take it over, that teacher, you could just watch, like, she just started to relax. I'm like, oh, I get it, you know, and I have to just take a step back and, you know, do this. Let the tech do the teaching. That.
True. Yeah. What I've the one situation that I've always found scary, I would walk into this room, into this classroom, and sometimes it was funny where we had basically a very beautiful sight of a 9-year-old explaining to his teacher how Google worked.
Oh yeah,
which was one of the scenes that I witnessed. I was just standing silently in the corner and just watching it happen, which to me was was, I felt very romantic and very, very
because you were that 9-year-old once, right?
Yeah, this is the new generation. These are the, these will herald the new times. But then on the other hand, I did see a situation where the teacher was indeed completely lost. And the hard part about it is that the hardest thing to do is to teach a teacher.
That's exactly what I did, though, and that's what got me into it. I mean, if you ask me the question how I got started, I mean, it really all goes back to junior high and high school. The computers were just coming into the classroom. I mean, I started at, like, say, 14. At the age of 14, 15 years old, I was teaching my teachers. You know, the best story that I like to tell is, this is a great thing. My high school graphic designer teacher, you know, where we learned screen printing and the printing process, he had been on a waiting list for 3 years to get a Macintosh computer, and he finally had gotten one. And then when he finally got one, he had no idea how to use it. Meanwhile, I had been going to a trade school for half the day. I was a vocational technical student. So I'd been going to technical school for half the day out of high school each day. And so I had started learning, you know, back when it was Aldus, you know, and the early graphics programs and things like that. So I knew how to work with vectors and things like that. And so I started taking time out of my class time for that period to sit down and teach him how to use this computer. And then we would, you know, make graphics together, and then we would print them out, and then we would, you know, transfer them over to screen printing, you know, shoot them on film with the camera and this and that and the other thing. And it got to be towards the end of the school year, and I was really behind on the assignments that I was supposed to be doing. And I went to him very concerned, you know, because I was close to graduation. And I said, oh my gosh, you know, Mr. W, am I gonna pass your class? I think I have like a D. And he opened up his grade book, and he looked at it, and of course this paper, you know, graph paper, and he looked at it, and he just peeked at me over the top of his black rimmed glasses, and he said, well, I had thought about failing you. I was just like, had this look of horror on my face. He said, because I really wanted to keep you around for another year. Because he wanted me to teach him how to use this. And so he passed me on the merit that I had, you know, I basically got credit for teaching him how to use the Mac. And, you know, even in between there, you know, the physics teacher next door discovered that I was doing these things on the Mac. And so I ended up doing his wedding invitations all at the age of 15, you know, in high school. And then come talk about full circle, that teacher and his wife, who was also my home ec teacher. Now this is, you know, back in Pennsylvania, so on the other side of the country, they retired and they now live one zip code away from me. And they got in touch with me and hired me to be their consultant and teach them how to use their iMac. And so I did. I worked with them while I was pregnant with Keegan and got them all set up and ready to go. I took an older iMac that, you know, they weren't really able to use it much. And I opened it up and I upgraded the RAM and got them set up with a Time Machine and upgraded them to, you know, I basically maxed out as best I could. I think I got them onto Leopard, and, you know, now they're happy and they email. And in fact, I'm so proud. Like, now the tables have been turned. So this is he's a 70-year-old, you know, retired graphics teacher, and he would always pen, you know, hand make his own Christmas cards. And I taught him how to automate, like, the addressing, the envelope system using Pages. And so now every year I get a hand-drawn yet commercially printed Christmas card that's in an envelope that he learned how to mass address with what I taught him.
it's such a beautiful thing. If you think about it, you ask other people, they go like, oh, I so adore a handwritten envelope that is so personal. Yeah. And we absolutely freak out when we get like, he did that automation himself on the computer. And it's so awesome.
One of my clients always, you know, she writes me, is like, you would be so proud of me. I did this, this, and this. And oh my gosh, I just want to cry sometimes because I am so incredibly proud of my students. I mean, it gives me chills. I mean, they think it's, you know, they think it's cute. They think I'm going to think it's stupid, but they don't realize just how proud I am. It is just amazing. I am so incredibly proud.
I've come to the point with my hairdresser We're good friends, so we go over and we have dinner sometimes. And I started them out on a Mac. I started them out on their second Mac. They're now on their first iPad. They will be going on their second iPad. They're on their iPhones right now. He's on an Android. Kids are on Linux. Just upgraded the 9-year-old to Linux Mint. That she really likes. The other one's on Windows. She's the posh one, and I have a Sony Vaio. Everybody in this house that just has a Mac, I have a Sony Vaio. She's very proud of very posh, proud of her Sony because it's pink. So you know, we used to go over there for I think two three years that we've been friends, and I've seen them grow and grow and grow, and. Lately, last week we were there, and he's into BitTorrent, and just legal files, you know, ISOs, whatever, and you know what I mean.
Of course.
And he starts talking to me about these BitTorrent clients. Like, yeah, I found Views and Azurius, and I can do this and this and this and this and this. And how do you download content? And I said, like, I use that and that and that. And he looks at me, he says, like, you're so primitive. Now look, and he starts explaining to me, and he says, at a certain moment, he says, like, you probably know all this. I said, like, no, I don't.
That's an amazing turnaround. That's happened a couple of times too, where they've introduced me to something else. And
I think that as a teacher, or let's call it a digital parent, a parent of a little, I don't know, a digital tribble. We put digital tribbles in their house, and we see them, multiply. I think that's the proudest moment, where the student becomes the teacher.
Right, and so now you also understand what it means to mother with technology. That's how I feel all the time with everything that I do. I try to put some kind of a mothering, you know, spin to it. I don't just, you know, make things work or fix things. I actually care. I care very deeply about the end user experience and how that person is going to interact with that technology. It's amazing how people think it's just a computer. It's just a device.
It's just
a computing device. But it is so, so personal. It's so ingrained in our life. It's like having another member of the family in a way, depending on what it is. I mean, I joke about it, but I don't have an iPad yet, and I'm planning on getting one. But this is going to sound so funny. I feel like getting an iPad for me. This is a new foray. I've been waiting to do this. I'm usually not an early, you know, bleeding edge hardware adopter. I usually wait till about second or third gen. So it's time for me. And I'm getting to a point where I can't justify not having them because all my clients are getting them. Mm-hmm. And I have to be able to keep up with that. I have to eat my own dog food, you know? And so, but for me, excuse me, it's not just about getting a device, going out and buying one. No, I want to have like the coming home outfit all ready to go. Like, so I know which iPad I want, but I don't know yet which case I want. So you've even given me a couple of suggestions. So I'm still, you know, I haven't found like the perfect little outfit to put on it just yet. So I won't go get it until I have, you know, the little crib and everything ready for it. And then I will get it. And then, you know, I will welcome it into my home, and I will unpackage it. I will unbox it, you know, very lovingly, and I will clean it off and, you know, wipe its butt, and I will put it, you know, in a little case, and away we will go.
But that's the great thing about not being an early adopter. When you're an early adopter, you stand in line. When you're not an early adopter, you already know what the apps are. You already know what the best case is. You've got it all set up, and you already know the specs and the reviews and what the people said. And finally, it comes. I want to quote the great Mr. Spock on that says, having is not as pleasing as wanting. It's not as logical, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
Which is, I've never thought of getting a gadget as getting a new member into your family, but it's actually quite true. Have you ever lost graphics gadgets where you physically mourned their passing?
No, but I've come close to it, and I almost wanted to vomit. Okay. I mean, luckily it like fell, and when it was an iPhone, it went under the seat in the car and I found it. And that's why I am very, I have our family account set up. So all of our devices, everything is on Find My iPhone with the family account.
Yeah.
So when I log in to Find My iPhone or Find My iThingy, you know, I see the list of all of our devices and I can tell. And I even, like, one time my husband's lost, you know, connectivity or something, and I chastised him. I'm like, I can't find your iPhone. I texted him or I called him. I'm like, do you have the, you know, setting turned off or whatever? And I guess he went to disable stuff to save on the battery. And I was like, no, you can turn everything else off, but you cannot turn that off.
Now, I've seen this where people build up relations with gadgets. It's less, it's not as intense anymore as it used to be because they switch so rapidly. But
yes.
I have my Commodore 64 right yes. here, and I will be damned if I sell it.
Right. I still have the first Mac that I ever bought, and it's dead, and it's, you know, got a blinking question mark, and I think it's up to OS 9.22, and it's in my dad's attic, and I refuse to get rid of it, and I'll turn it into a planter before I get rid of that thing, because I'm probably still paying for it in interest. You know, I got that when I was in college. That was my first machine that I bought with my own money, you know, and I won't get rid of it, and I'm very nostalgic. I still have lots of gadgets. I'm very good at, you know, teaching the boys not to be pack rats. And, you know, we keep a very simplified lifestyle, but I firmly believe in reduce, reuse, recycle. Mm-hmm. And so if I will repurpose something. I can say now that this is a very small house, but aside from my son's bathroom, we have, you know, two bathrooms, one's a little half bath. We now have a Mac in every room in the house. Now, not all of them work, mind you. I mean, they all work. I should say they all worked. But, like, you know, I even have a beige tower that sits in the laundry room just so I can say we have a Mac in every room in the house. It's a matter of principle. It holds up laundry baskets. It serves a purpose.
You know? And it's the most stylish laundry basket razor on the planet.
Right. Exactly. I have one PC in the house. And it's being used to hold up another Mac desktop. So it's being used, you know, it's not turned on. It's not hooked up, but it's being used for something. I have all kinds of gadgets. Someone gave me a broken PowerBook G4 and the screen is completely busted on it. But there's this one like 3-inch corner that still works. And that's all I needed to be able to set up system preferences. And I set it up as a headless server of some sorts, and I basically just it's in our bathroom. So yes, I have a Mac in our bathroom, and it sits on the shelf above the toilet, you know, and it's all kind of decorated, and I just have, like, you know, our cotton balls and Q-tips and things like adorning it, and it serves as like a bubble bath music player. You know, I can and play music for the kids, and, you know, and I can control it remotely from my iPhone.
Okay, I have just been outclassed in both recycling hardware and tuning it into your way of life, and we're gonna redo yes. our bathroom next year. I know what's gonna be right under the tub. Speaking of gadgets, I want to end on a philosophical note.
As if we haven't
already, but Keegan's gonna be just close your eyes. Let me take you to a future far, not that far away. Keegan's gonna be 12. He's gonna come home. He's gonna say, "Mommy, I've just gone to school," and he's gonna fling a laptop or fling a device on your kitchen table. What will it be, and how will he operate it?
When he's 12, let's see, that's going to be in 10 years. In 10 years' time, in a decade, what could happen in a decade? A lot could happen in a decade. If we're still living here, it will probably be some type of iPad because tech is adopted so slowly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little bit quicker than out east, but I think it will still be, I'm going to guess in a decade's time, it will still be some kind of a tablet. I don't think we'll be much further than that. So I'm going to say it's going to be some kind of a tablet. It may not be an iPad per se, because I think by then there's going to be a lot more competition and there will be better tablets. I mean, not to say that there aren't. There are other good tablets, mm-hmm. I'm loath to say not as good as the iPad, but I know, you know, there's people, you know, the Kindle Fire. It'll be something like that.
Touch interface, or will he be Tom Cruise Minority Report style swiping the sky?
Not in 10 years. I think we're a little bit, I think that will be going on in 10 years because, I mean, we already have some holographics, but I don't think that it will be adopted and implemented in his school by that time. I think it'll still be, you and I will still be tinkering with it. We'll have it in our house, but he won't have it in school. I don't think.
And as a personal, if we can call it smartphone, his own personal consumerized possession?
He'll definitely have something, some kind of communicator, and it will have some kind of a GPS in it that I can track him. if they made those like chips for the dogs and they had GPS tracking and you could put them in kids, I would. And I know parents would just be horrified by that, but I would, you know, I mean, they get their ears pierced and stuff. So why can't they just like have it put in his earlobe or something? You know what I mean?
You want a piercing? Yes. You take this GPS enabled piercing. There you go. On your belly button. So he can track you.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
when we go out places, we put our phone number, we take a Sharpie marker and we lift up their shirt and we write our phone number on their belly, you know, in case we go out to a place that's got a lot of people in case they get lost or something, you know, we're just that paranoid. I just would rather have, you know, a digital device that I could embed in them that I wouldn't have to scrub off their skin.
But it's actually very logical to give them some kind of eye device with a connection going like, here, hold on to this so mommy can track you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing view. So we're going to round up. I want to thank you for this delightful interview. People who have not been charmed off their socks by your delightful entertainment should have their head checked right now. And the ones that have had enough of you should have their head checked as well. So where can people find you online and find more of the beautiful Melissa Davis?
I try to keep it simple. It's just themacmommy.com. All one word, no spaces, themacmommy.com.
So you're on Google, you're on Google Plus, you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, you're on Pinterest, basically every social network that's out there.
Just Google the Mac Mommy and you'll find me somewhere.
You have been podcasting. Is there any chance that you will be coming back to the podcast?
I want to so badly. I really, really do. It's the production, you know, that kind of holds us back. There is some producing that needs to happen and editing and, you know, life kind of gets in the way. but yes, I would definitely like to do it. We are planning on doing it. Pat Fouquet and I run momsgonegeek.net. In fact, actually, I finally, after so many years, it's been tied up, but I finally own momsgonegeek.com. And so we really do want to get back into it, but we've been taking care of business. So it's there. And everything's set up and ready to go. We just need to schedule the time. And, you know, it's when you're one person, when you're a one-man show, it's probably a lot easier and you don't have the kids. But, you know, she's not only got children, she's got grandchildren. You know, I have kids and, you know, it's us two and then collaborating and 3-hour time difference. You know, it's a large production to pull off. But we love doing it. It's a labor of love. We just need some assistance with production. And when we can find that, maybe we'll get back into it. Actually, this weekend, I'm scheduled to appear on a panel discussion with Not Another Mac Podcast. And you can check that out. I've been on there a couple of times. I usually like to hang out with the guys and gals over at TUAW, the unofficial Apple weblog. I participate in the talk casts on Sunday nights whenever I can. Who else do I hang out with? Allison Sheridan, of course. You and I have a lot of the same friends. So you pretty much know the group there. But yeah, any of those places I try to hang out, and it's always, you know, I thank you because it's always a delight that, you know, you're the one that has to produce it and you can put it up and I just get to link to it. So I'm grateful for that. Thank you for producing.
It will take us quite a lot of time to put your voice through a processor and make it make the entire one hour interview sound like making you sound like Alvin from the Chipmunks. But
great,
it will be worth it. Melissa, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on Nightwise.com. I had this beautiful row of this beautiful list of questions lined out, which I didn't use at all, and I thought that was delightful because this interview went in such an unexpected but much better direction than any crap I could have thought up in advance. So the Mac Mommy is not an interviewee; it's an event. It happens to you. So thank you for coming online, and we hope to see you again soon.
Oh, I plan on it. I would like to do some more talking. There's lots we still have to cover, lots we still have to talk about. We'll talk about media centers another time.
I think you have just had not your interview on Nightwise.com, Bart, but your debut.
Debut.
Yes, you have just come to the scene, and we will be hopefully seeing and hearing many, many more minutes of talk from this beautiful and smart young lady, as I may still call you. Thank you, Melissa, the Mac Mommy. Well, that's all we have time for this week on the Edge of Real and Cyberspace. I do hope you enjoyed the interview with the charming Melissa Davis as much as I did. It was a great privilege to have her on the show, and we had a hoot recording that interview. As usual, if you want to get in touch with us or have feedback at nightwise.com is our email address. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/nightwise, or on Facebook, facebook.com/nightwisecom. And if you want to help out the show, just tap somebody on the shoulder, tell them about the nightwise.com podcast, and bring another listener into the fold, or give us a review on iTunes, which we would also appreciate very much. So that's all we have time for this week on the Edge of Real and Cyberspace. If you have the time, visit the Nightwise.com website. There's more Mac goodness there. We have a great article about using Goodreader, a great tutorial there, a screencast that we found, and also a great article, How to Bend Lion to Your Will, using the command line, copy-pasting easy commands into the terminal and tweaking Lion just the way you wanted to. Things you would have never thought possible in OS X can be done with that easy tutorial. All of that and more can be found on the Nightwise.com website, where we post articles almost every day. Until then, until the next time, it's bye-bye for me here from sunny Belgium. See you guys on the flip side. Until then, let technology work for you instead of the other way around. Bye.